I was living in Lincolnshire. My home was in Lincolnshire. Yes, and I joined up at Grantham, and in the 3rd of September, I think it was, and I was went for training in Wales, and then I came was posted to Hemswell, where I stayed most of my time. It was a Wellington, two Polish squadrons, Wellington bombers, 1300 and 301, I think it was. And we had a lot of Poles there, and we had Prince Radziwiłł, one of the Polish princes there. And also, I must say that a Polish officer came up from London and organised General Sikorski's funeral. And I used to take him for almost a week. I took him to Newark while he was making the arrangements for this funeral, because Winston Churchill, and he was attending, so I suppose they wanted to organise everything to go smoothly. And when the Wellingtons went, of course we had the Lancasters, and everyone was absolutely thrilled. They thought they were the newest and the fastest bombers. And, we had a mixed squadron, the Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, and it was sort of a happy, very happy atmosphere, apart from the occasional disaster when everyone was sort of very sad and we were sort of missing everyone so much. And it was the crews, when they were going to operate, you knew, because there was such a buzz about the station. Everyone was going at twice the pace. And, of course, they had a lot of things to do, like bombing up wireless van, making sure the wirelesses were operating. Bomb loads were on trolleys going out round the perimeter. And everyone was working at a different pace. You just knew. And, of course, everyone sort of was so with it and so anxious to help and so sort of looking forward to everything going smoothly. Everyone worked jolly hard. And the work seemed to go on for several hours, of course. And also, the Met Office were concerned, the radios were concerned, apart from the bombing up, which was a serious business. The bombs had to come from the bomb dump and be hoisted underneath the Lancasters. And it was really a tremendous effort. And, of course, all going to take off time, and they had to go and be briefed, and the weather and the wind and what to expect over enemy territory, and danger points along the route, and things like that. And I don't know, we were so anxious, that we drivers, I was a driver, and so anxious outside the control tower when it was time for all the aircraft to come back, listening to them calling up on their radios as they were doing the circuit round prior to landing. And it was a very tense time, and a very sad time, really, on many occasions. And you didn't get to know whether they'd been crashed, taken prisoner. We never got to know, and I suppose the hierarchy did know, but certainly we humble drivers didn't. And it was a very sad occasion. And we were so happy to be doing a small part in this. But the thing sometimes I think about, I really never thought much about what was happening at the other end and the devastation, which I suppose I was so young and so anxious about the British people. They were all being bombed, and I suppose that's the attitude I took at that time. But yes, it was a trying time, and we had no heater. Well, the little black stoves in our accommodation. We were two in a room, just two beds, and When I first joined, the pillows seemed to be made of straw, so I had to take my own feather pillow. And I cried when my hot water bottle burst because it was so awful. There was no heating and it was so cold.
What was life like in Lincolnshire? Because obviously as a Lincolnshire girl, you'd have seen all the planes coming in, moving in as the war started going. And I think by the end of the war, there was 50,000 RAF personnel in Lincolnshire. It must have been a very blue county with the uniforms.
Oh, yes, it was. And we were took great care with our uniform. We had a best uniform and a not-so-good one for working in. And battle dress, of course, driving. And yes, but they were very good, actually, organising the RAF. They organised buses down to Lincoln for us and picking us up late at night from Lincoln. We had lots of dances and shows, and there was a very nominal charge. And might I say at that time, as a LACW, I got 10 shillings a week working all the hours that God sent. And as you can imagine, in transport, working through the night many a time. And we had a night of duty every sort of second week when we had to be busy.
Hemswell was the first airfield you worked at. Just tell us a bit about what it was like, because I think it was pretty much a field, wasn't it? Not much more?
Well, we had these long wooden huts with a sort of walkway down the centre and a sort of bathroom and toilets. We had two WAFs to each room, but there was no room to swing a cat, really. Your bed fitted in, and then I think there was a chair at the side of the bed and this big black stove thing. But the thing is, if you weren't on site when the coal was delivered, everyone was grasping boxes full and everything, and you went, and there was hardly anything left for you to put on in your big black stove. But yes, and they had inspections, you know, kit inspections. You had to polish all the buttons and everything else and lay it on the bed, and they came around and looked at it and whether you passed, you know, inspection or not.
And so what did your job entail? Were you largely taking the crews out to their planes and that
taking
type of thing?
Taking the crews out to their plane, going down to Gainsborough in the morning to get the post, bring back camp. And, well, anything really. I mean, we used to drive tractors. And when I was at Ingham, we used to have a caravan on the edge of the runway. It wasn't a concrete runway. There was no pressing a button and it lit up. You had to put goosenecks out. And they're like great big watering cans with a long neck and full of paraffin. And the sergeant in charge at the caravan used to have to go and light them. And then the aircraft could land. How about that?
And what was it like about getting on with the crews? I've heard some WAFs say they decided pretty quickly they couldn't get too close to crew because they took off and you wouldn't know if they would come back.
Well, I never felt that about it, really. I just hoped they'd come back. I mean, you did get more fond of some crews than you did of others, yes. But always you wanted them all to come back. Mm. Yes, and it was very sad when they didn't. It was horrible hours of waiting sometimes if they'd landed down south or couldn't. There was a case where they had to have FIDO, which was sort of paraffin lamps dispersing the fog for landing. And because there were a lot of planes crashed when they were coming in to land. And when I was at Hemswell, one of them crashed actually in the centre where there was a big green patch between two blocks of houses, and it landed in this green patch, but in such a bad fashion. The rear gunner was in the turret at the end, all smashed up, and you know, several people killed.
And you were saying how multinational it was. I mean, it was obviously, yes. You know, I guess the WAFs were largely British, weren't they? But
British.
Air crews were
all
over the place.
Yes. There was Canadians, Australians, and, you know, New Zealanders, and they all seemed to fit in well, and they were a jolly crowd. Life was fun when they weren't operating, you know. There's a great sense of fun, like let's enjoy ourselves, tomorrow we might not be here. And there are lots of parties and lots of fun. And really, you know, if it hadn't been for the loss of life, it would have been the most wonderful time.
Yeah, I sort of sense it was make the most of every moment for everyone.
Yes, I can remember there was, I think there was an occasion when someone tried to get a car, a small car, I think Austin 7 it was, up the steps into the officer's mess, which caused a bit of consternation. And oh, they're all up to all sorts of tricks, blacking the headband, you know, when the officer's hat had a headband, and they used to play cards and get drunk and black the headband, and someone would go to put it on and they had a black rim round there. Full of fun they were, yes.
And how would you compare, you said you were based off at Ingham afterwards, was Ingham a different sort of airfield, was it smaller?
Well, it seemed to me to be such an emergency place, you know. The 199 squadron came there and they were mixed, you know, mixed crew, but they were always organising dances and parties and, you know, live for today.
I think there was a lot of a Polish aircrew, particularly at Ingham, wasn't there?
Well, Polish aircraft were there at first, and then towards the end they had 199 squadron, which was a mixed squadron.
When you talked about when they go off on a raid, just talk a little bit more about that, because I guess for everyone waiting at home, it was a pretty nervous time, wasn't it?
Well, before they left the station, the medical officer used to go around delivering caffeine tablets, because if it was a long raid, I think, was it Berlin, was I think about 8 hours, I think. And another little thing, some of them had mascots and they wouldn't go without their little lucky things. And another thing, they had a superstition, I'm told, by that they used to take a flask with them because it's a long time without a drink. And they wouldn't start their drink until they were on the homeward leg.
You were talking a little bit about an incident whereby two planes from different airfields when they were taking off, I think, collided.
Yes, Scampton and Ingham. Yes, they had a collision on this circuit when they were sort of coming into land. It was an awful event, really, and such a waste. They'd done their mission and come home safely and, you know, almost on the doorstep. And it's a serious thing.
And if you had one abiding memory from all your time, I mean, there's a lot to go through, I know, but if there was one thing that really stuck in your mind, a sort of a memory from your times at Hemswell and at Ingham, what would that be?
Well, I tell you what it was. There was an ATA pilot that used to deliver the new aircraft from the factory to the airfield, and she came in and she was beautiful, blonde hair, and looked lovely, and I thought, oh dear, I'd wish I could fly an aircraft. And, you know, I was around the control tower, and about 20 minutes later it came in that they'd taken this aircraft up, she had done, with one of the squadron leaders, giving it a circuit round, and they'd crashed and they were all killed. And I thought, oh dear, you know, how dreadful for her and her family. Because they didn't have a lot of training, those pilots, bringing the new aircraft in. Such a short period. I think that was that sort of really upset me, you know. And they were volunteers, weren't they?
And you must look back at it all with a lot of pride, and when you see the memorial finally getting unveiled in London last year, and you hear that people are perhaps making more of an effort to remember the crews, that must give you some pleasure after so many years when it perhaps hasn't happened.
Yes, I was thrilled. I thought it should be, the memorial should be in Lincolnshire, and of all the people that had gone, such young lives, the cream of British manhood, you know, they were so well trained, a lot of them of pilots from universities, and they gave their young lives, you know, for this dreadful man, Hitler. Yes, it was very upsetting, that was. And of course I lost a boyfriend, and he lost First of all, he lost his elder brother, who was flying on the same raid. And then he lost his youngest brother, who was on a night flying exercise because he'd just joined. And then my boyfriend, Peter, he was killed. So there was three boys from one family. How about that?